His divine grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki, ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki, Raj Granta Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki, Sri Sinatai Gaura Chandra Ki, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Lady Subhadra Ki, Sri Sri Kishore Kishori Ki, Sri Sri Gaurnatai Ki, Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki, Tai Gaur Vimanandi. Glories to the assembled devotees. Glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Glories to Sri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today I thought I'd start a series of classes that deal with one verse in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses 8 through 12 of the 13th chapter. Before we begin that discussion, I want to go back over the beginning of the 13th chapter and give a little understanding of the basic philosophy of this chapter. In the very first verse of the 13th chapter, Arjuna begins, and he says, Prakritim purusham chaiva shatram shatradyam eva cha etad vidutam icchami gyanam gyanye gyayam chitkeshava. Krishna answers, Sri Bhagavan uvacha idem sariram konteya shatram ityavidiyate eto yo veti tam prahu shetogya iti tad vidaha. Arjuna says, My dear Krishna, I wish to know about prakriti, that is nature, purusha, the enjoyer, and the field, and the knowledge of the field, and the knowledge and the object of knowledge. So read that again. This 13th chapter is a very philosophical chapter. It deals with, I'll wait till everybody's ready, then I'll speak. The 13th chapter is a very philosophical chapter. Krishna says, Arjuna says, My dear Krishna, I wish to know about nature, the enjoyer, and the field, and the knower of the field, and the knowledge and the object of knowledge. Krishna says, This body, O son of Kunti, is called the field. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. In second and third verse, Krishna says, O Skinabharta, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. And to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. So this body is called the field. It's the field of activities for the living entity who dwells within the body. Now the knower of that field is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Super Soul residing in the heart. And the enjoyer of the field is the living entity who has this body, who's trying to enjoy that field. So these are the basic understandings of the relationship between these three. The field, the knowledge, the field, the proprietor of the field, and the enjoyer of the field. See, we are the, as a living entity, we are the tenant. We are not the actual proprietor of this body. The proprietor is the Supreme Lord, who is the source of all bodies. We inhabit this body as a person inhabits a house. We're like the tenant, but we're not the landlord. We don't own it. And we're trying to enjoy the house. And what is the house made up of? The various types of items for enjoyment. Furniture, rugs, clothing, appliances. All these things are part of... So in this body, there's a variety of appliances or different manifestations of how to enjoy. Krishna explains. Now please hear my brief description of this field of activity and how it is constituted, what its changes are, whence it is produced, who that knower of the field of activities is, and what are the influences. So we're getting into some really philosophical points here, so it requires a little bit of a mindset to try to understand this. This chapter is very difficult to understand because it's very philosophical. But it's interesting once you get into it because you can understand a little bit about jnana and knowledge. So here again, the field of activity is the body. How it is constituted, what makes up this body, what are the changes in this body, how it's produced, who the knower of the field of activity is and what the influences are of the field of activity. The next verse Krishna says, that knowledge of the field of activities and the knower of the activities is described in by various sages in various Vedic writings. It is especially presented in Vedanta Sutra with all its reasonings as to cause and effect. Okay, verse 6 and 7. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses and the mind, the 5 sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interactions. Did you follow that? I'll read it again. So this body is a field, and we are the living entity within the field, and we are trying to enjoy the field. We are the, what we call the enjoyer of the field. Now there's a proprietor of the field. Now, what is this field constituted as? So here Krishna says, the five great elements. What are the five great elements? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's one thing this body is made up of. False ego, another item. The intelligence, the unmanifested. 10 senses. What are the 10 senses? The eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the sense of touch. These are the 5 knowledge acquiring senses. Now there's 5 working senses. The hands, the legs, the belly, the genitals, and the rectum are considered the 5 working senses. So these are the 10 senses, 5 knowledge acquiring, 5 working. Now, there's one more sense which is considered the mind. So altogether there are 11 senses. The 5 sense objects are taste, touch, smell, sound, and sight. 5 sense objects. Desire, that's made up of this body. Hatred, happiness, distress, and the combination of all these is called the aggregate. The life symptoms, what are the life symptoms? Hunger, thirst, like that. And convictions are all considered, in summary, to be the field of the activities and its interactions. So Krishna is giving the knowledge of what this body is made of. This body is called the field. It's the thing you get to enjoy. Okay? Now, here, I'll read the purport. From all the authoritative statements of the great sages, the Vedic hymns, and the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra, the components of this world can be understood as follows. First, there are earth, water, fire, air, and ether. These are the 5 great elements. Then there are false ego, intelligence, and the unmanifest stage of the 3 modes of nature. Then there are the 5 senses for acquiring knowledge, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the skin. The 5 working senses, voice, legs, hands, anus, and genitals. And above the senses there is the mind, which is within, which can be called the sense within. Therefore, including the mind, there are 11 senses altogether. Then there are the 5 objects of the senses, smell, taste, form, sound, and touch. Now the aggregate of these 24 elements is called the field of activities. The aggregate is everything combined. If one makes an analytic study of these 24 subjects, then he can be very well understood understand the field of activity. So if you study these 24 elements, you'll understand what this body is made of and how it's, what are the interactions, how it's working. Then there are desire, hatred, happiness, and distress, which are interactions. They're not just actions, but they're interactions. Representations of the five great elements in the gross body. The living symptoms represented by consciousness and conviction are the manifestation of the subtle mind, ego, and intelligence. These subtle elements are within the field of activities. The five great elements are a gross representation of the false ego, which in turn represents the primal stage of the false ego technique called the materialistic conception, or tamasa buddhi, intelligence and ignorance. So there's intelligence and passion, intelligence and goodness, intelligence and ignorance. This further represents the unmanifest stage of the three modes of material nature, which is called pradana. One who desires to know the 24 elements in detail, along with their interactions, should study the philosophy in more detail. In Bhagavad Gita, a summary only is given. The body is a representation of all these factors, and there are changes of the body which are six in number. So who knows what are the six changes of the body? Birth, growth. Before that, birth, growth, and what happens? There's some staying for some time. It stays. Then there's byproducts, dwindling, and then vanishes. Therefore, the field is a non-permanent material thing. However, the knower of the field, its proprietor, is different. So here we're getting into a really basic philosophical understanding of the difference between the living entity and the body. What is the nature of that, the field of the living entity, and the knower of the field? In other words, it's not that we are a body and we have a soul, like some people think. We are actually a soul and we have a body. Our identity is spiritual. So the body is the field of activities for the living entity. Okay. So now my class is really beginning on the next verse, just to give you a basic outline of this. This verse is five verses in one. Anam vitvam adam vitvam ahimsam shanti arjavam acharya pasaram saucham stayam atman vinigraha indriyarteshu vairagyam ananhankara evacha jnanam mitya jara vyari dukkha dosha udarshanam ashaktir anavishragya putra dara ganadishi nityam cha shama chitta tvam ista nista upapasti su mayi chananya yogena bhakti avyabhicharini vivikta desha sevitvam arati jnana samsadhi adhyatma jnana nitya tvam tatva jnanartha darshanam etat jnanam itam proktam ajnanam yad atonyata. So these are five verses Krishna says. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of the false ego, perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. Even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me. Aspiring to live in a solitary place. Detachment from the general mass of people. Accepting the importance of self-realization. And philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. So Krishna is giving the items of knowledge. I believe it's 20 items are considered the items of knowledge. Should I read it again? Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of the false ego, perception of the evil of birth and death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So Krishna again, he's giving the knowledge. So we'll read, and for the next few days, we'll go item by item and discuss each of these items in as much detail as we can. So today we'll do whatever we can do. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of 24 elements. And the process of knowledge, as described here, is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mayi chanyanya rohena bhakti avyabhichayini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes the devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12, Yasyati Bhakti Bhagavati Akinchana Survai Gunas Tatra Samastase Sura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes the devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. So here, Prabhupada's emphasizing that knowledge means to get out of the entanglement. Not that knowing the entanglement is knowledge. The general mass of people think to know the actions and reactions of this material world, and to maximize the happiness and to minimize the distress by this knowledge. They study the body in order to try to maximize the happiness that one can derive from having a material body and minimizing the distress. But here it's explained that the actual knowledge is to get out of the entanglement of the 24 elements. And these items here that are listed in this translation are the means that one needs to develop in order to get out. But of course, Prabhupada emphasizes that of all the 20 items, one is essential. Without that one, the other 19 have no, and that is unalloyed devotion to the Lord. Devotion to the Lord is the foundation where all the other items develop. But still, the other items are important. But they can't, just like the body is a very nice unit. If you analyze the different parts of this body, you find it's a machine. But the most important part of the machine is the brain. If the brain doesn't work, then none of the other parts are going to work. If the finger doesn't work, somehow the body still works. If the leg doesn't work, the body doesn't work. It still works. You can analyze the different parts, and still the body can go on. But if the brain is not working, then everything else really is not functioning. It can't function without the brain. So all these items of knowledge are important only when there is devotional service to the Lord. And then Srila Prabhupada explains that approaching a bona fide spiritual master is an essential item for that. So okay, now this purport is very long. It goes on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 full pages. So each of the items of knowledge are discussed in brief. So what I'll do for the next few days is we'll go down a list and we'll speak about each of the items. So here, Prabhupada continues. As for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility, can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
It's okay? Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The materialistic conception of life makes us eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to the body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles, and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. So the first one is humility. And Srila Prabhupada explains it. Humility means that one should not have the desire to be honored by others. So we find that generally in the material world, people aspire for this, to be honored by others, to be noticed. Sometimes we say to be famous. It's a form of intoxication of the false ego to think one is important or better than others. People want worship, they want distinction, they want some honor, they want some reward. So they perform activities in order to be honored by men. But here it's explained that in spiritual life, one who is aspiring for the goal of spiritual life, devotion to the Lord, is not interested in honor from others. And this is a... Because why? Because honor pertains to what? pertains to this body. And one knows that I am not this body. So therefore, why the idea of honoring this body is a false conception? Because it's not me. The body belongs to Krishna. The body's been given by Krishna to be. And then he's not intoxicated by that honor. Nor is he anxious to receive honor when he doesn't receive honor. Because he knows, and they say, praise and blame is all the same, only different in name. Whether someone praises you, glorifies you, or criticizes you, it's all the same really, because ultimately it all pertains to the body. And the living entity is not the body. So a devotee is not anxious to be praised, nor is he in the same way in distress if someone criticizes or minimizes him. Either way, he's detached. Jai Shri Shri Kishore Kishore. So this item of humility is considered to be one of the more important items in making advancement in spiritual life. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasizes this quality of humility over all the other qualities. In his Shikshasika prayer, he says, Trinad api suni chena, and that one must be more humble than the blade of grass. He uses the grass as an example of humility. So what is the grass? The grass, people walk on it, dogs and other animals use it for a bathroom, people pitch their tents on it, stab it with their stakes. But the grass does not protest. The grass does not protest. So Lord Chaitanya says one has to be more humble than the grass. Not only like the grass, but even beyond that. Of course, he goes on to explain tolerance like a tree, and free from all pridelessness. Then he says the qualification for developing this is that one can chant the holy name constantly. So by developing the quality of humility, one develops one of the more essential qualities for successful execution in devotional service. Actually, it says that at the time of death, all of one's achievements in whatever one has done is useless if he has no humility. If one is proud, or if one is somehow falsely thinking that I am successful, and then anything that one has done actually nullifies itself without the quality of humility and enhances itself with the quality of humility. Why is that? Why is this quality of humility such an important quality? Why is it distinct amongst all the qualities of devotional service? Why is there so much emphasis on its importance? Why is because we fall from the spiritual world because of our enviousness of Krishna. So that envious manifests itself to desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So the way to reverse that trend is the quality is necessary is humility. Without that quality, one cannot reverse one's ascent into the material world. In other words, one is gradually increasing their entanglement in the material world, unless they actually develop real humility. And of course, humility also means to accept someone superior, one who is proud or puffed up or thinking themselves an enjoyer, a doer, or is looking for honor, always categorizes their activities as being something of their own nature. They calculate how to do things according to in their consciousness. But of one who is humble, he's always thinking how to serve the Lord and how to develop the qualities that are conducive to service of the Lord by accepting the authority of the Lord and the authority of the Lord's spiritual teacher. So humility simply means to put oneself under the control of someone else and accept that wholeheartedly. So we can see here that this quality of humility is very essential for spiritual life because it reverses one's ascent or descent into the material energy. By becoming humble, one starts to actually make real progress on the path of emotional service. Therefore, in the actual Vedic system, the process was that the disciple, the brahmachari, would come and live in the home of the spiritual master and work with the spiritual master by carrying out menial duties and by learning from the spiritual master knowledge, transcendental knowledge. So two things would be there. Simply to receive transcendental knowledge without the becoming humble is dangerous. This knowledge is dangerous. It's dangerous in the hands of persons who are not humble. It's dangerous. Just like the demons, Ravana, Harani Kashyapu, both had Vedic knowledge. But they were using that Vedic knowledge to defy the Lord and to become powerful. So this knowledge is a source of great power. But without becoming humble, that power will ultimately destroy one and can wreak havoc to the world. So sometimes the demons study the Vedas in order to understand how to manipulate the material energy for their own sense gratification. We understand that Hitler had Vedic knowledge. Hitler studied the Vedas. Prabhupada said he learned how the art of military science from the Vedas, but he also learned many of the other arts from Vedic knowledge. Because the absolute knowledge of truth of all sciences are found in the Vedas, not only spiritual sciences, but material sciences also. The Vedic knowledge is the complete knowledge, both nominal and phenomenal. Both. So this knowledge is very powerful. But without developing humility, the knowledge becomes a source of material advancement, or it works against the principles of devotional service. So one has to ultimately become humble. We see in our society too, many practitioners have great knowledge, but they do not stand the test of time unless they are actually humble. And there's a danger, because as one acquires knowledge, as one acquires position, one has a tendency to think I'm important, or that I'm better than others. And there's a danger in making advancement in spiritual life, because as one makes advancement, one gets more recognition, one gets more facility, one actually starts to feel more powerful. But one has to realize that knowledge, or that ability, that power, that facility, is coming by the grace of God. And at any time, God can take that away. We have the example of Arjuna. Arjuna was considered to be one of the most powerful warriors on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And he was getting his ability and power from Krishna. Because when Krishna was on the chariot, he was able to defeat such persons as Karna, Bhishma Dev, and Dronacharya, who were all his superiors in military power and strength. But by the grace of Krishna, he was able to defeat all of these. But then again, later on, when Krishna left the planet, Krishna used Arjuna as an example of how a devotee becomes powerful by the grace of the Lord and how a devotee loses his power by the grace of the Lord. After Krishna left his planet, Arjuna was speaking to Yudhisthira and he was explaining that, you know, I am the same Arjuna. I have the same mighty bow Gandiva and I have my same powerful arms. But I was unable to protect the queens. Arjuna was protecting the queens of Dwarka, and a band of cowherd men attacked and kidnapped the queens from Arjuna, and he was unable to defeat them. The same Arjuna who was defeating thousands of warriors in battlefield when Krishna was there, a little simple test of a few cowherd men, he lost. Why? It's because Krishna withdrew his power from Arjuna to show the world that by my grace you become powerful, and if I want, you can also lose everything too. We see in the history of the world, great nations attained to great achievements and material status. We have the Roman Empire and the Carthaginian Empire, the British Empire, and now we have the American Empire. All these empires have performed pious activities, but then they used their pious activities to exploit others. And what happens? After some time, they become destroyed. They destroy themselves internally. And then they finally, we see where's the Roman Empire now? Where's the Carthaginian Empire now? Where's the Athenian Empire now? Where's the British Empire now? They say, there used to be a saying, the sun never sets on the British Empire. That means everywhere in the world, some place was part of the British Empire. And the sun was always shining somewhere. Now, the sun never rises in the British Empire. You go to London, it's usually always cloudy and rainy. I just came back. Now it's just one little useless island where it has so many problems. So we see how time works, and that great nations, by performing pious activities, attain to great statuses within the world. And then they reject God. They reject the source of everything. They think materials, and they think success is simply material arrangements. And ultimately they destroy themselves. And the same thing will happen with America. It's happening already now. America is becoming so powerful. Now it's gradually its power is losing in the world, becoming less and less of power. Soon this civilization, America, will crash. It's already crashing. The economic situation, the political situation, the social situation is all very much being held together by patchwork arrangements. And gradually, it'll become more and more evident that this society, as it becomes more and more corrupt, will eventually fall. And pretty soon more and more of the American influence will be pushed out from different places of the world. It's already happening. So it's just a matter of time. And if you look at the other great civilizations, how long were they in existence before they fell? Hundreds and hundreds of years, sometimes even thousands of years. America's only been, the whole country's only 225 years old, right? 1776, right? Was the actual birth of America. So in 200 and some years, it has ascended to a world power. It's reached its pinnacle, now it's going down. That's fast. If you study, the British Empire was there for 800 more years. Other empires, and so the Roman Empire, thousands of years, over 1,000 years. So it's not that America is lasting longer than any, it's just the fact that we're in the midst of America right now, and it's gradually going down. So, Prabhupada said, Punar Mujiga Baba. He describes that, and there's a story about a sage, and there was a mouse. Punar means again, musica means mouse. So there was one mouse, he approached the sage. He said, there's a cat, he's chasing me. So the sage said, what do you want? He says, make me a cat. Makes him a cat.
Yeah.
So he's a cat. So he's going along. So the next day he comes back. He's all in anxiety. What's wrong? There's this dog. What do you want? Make me a dog. Sage makes him a dog. He's going along. So he's a dog. After some day he comes back and he's in anxiety. What's wrong? Well, there's this tiger chasing me. What do you want? Make me a tiger. It's a tiger. So now he's a tiger and he's sitting there. He's looking at the sage. He's licking his lips. Sage says, you want to eat me? Yes. Purna Mushika Baba. Again become mouse. So this is how Krishna works. First Krishna empowers. But then when we get so powerful, we want to push out God, we want to become God, and we want to forget about God. We think the goal is to become powerful or famous or successful. And then Krishna just pulls it up the rug to show that he actually is in control. So again, back to this point, the quality of humility is the quality that attracts the attention of the Lord. And by that quality, one is, can, whatever one does in spiritual life is glorious. And if one is, hasn't developed that quality, then it's very hard to please Krishna by one's activity. So what does it mean to become humble? Here we also say, Prabhupada gives a definition. Someone who is humble is not anxious to be honored by others, because honor and dishonor pertains to the body. But there's another definition of humility. There's actually many definitions, but one another definition is that humility means that I can do anything for Krishna. In other words, a devotee can do so many wonderful things in the service of the Lord. Why? Because he's being empowered by the Lord. Therefore, he gives all credit and success to the Lord and doesn't accept any credit and success for oneself. Therefore, every day we always say, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to my spiritual master. Which means that our success in our spiritual life depends upon the mercy of the Lord coming through the mercy of the spiritual master. And therefore, we don't take any personal credit for anything we do. We give all credit to the Lord and the Lord's devotees. And that is also a quality of humility. Therefore, if we can go on in this way, that means one can do anything for Krishna. Prabhupada had the whole world. He was planting Krishna consciousness everywhere in the world. But he was the same Prabhupada. He was getting recognition, facilities, men, money, material enemies, but same simple Prabhupada. He never changed. He would give away his material things, and he would use whatever he got to expand and to propagate Krishna consciousness in the world. And when someone would glorify Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, I don't know why, what I have done. The only credit I am that I did not change anything that my spiritual master gave me. He said, this is my credit. I didn't adulterate, subtract or add anything from the teachings of my spiritual master, therefore giving all credit to his spiritual master. So this is humility, and one doesn't take credit for anything. He gives credit to his spiritual master and to the Lord and to the other Vaishnavas also. So this first item in 20, we're reading from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The 20 items which are considered to be the items of knowledge. The first item is humility. So each day this week we'll try to discuss one or more of these items as the class. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments or anything? First, yes, Mari.
Well, you see, it's like we call it the counter submitted to Krishna, because it's very difficult to try to be these thoughts of like humility. You know, people in this day and age will take advantage of this.
Well, if people take advantage of you, there's a chance to become humble. Humility is not simply a theoretical precept that we imbibe by thinking about it. Humility is something that practically develops through interactions. So if someone minimizes you, neglects you, doesn't appreciate you, here's a chance to become humble. But the world is the other way, that we want to be recognized, we want to be appreciated, we want to be glorified, we want to be noticed. Therefore, if we don't get these things, we can't go on. Yes?
So it's the product of God.
There's different processes, as we explained, but one of the processes is to understand just how insignificant you are and how dependent you are. If we understand how great Krishna is and how small we are, then we can become humble. If we can understand just how dependent we are in every aspect of our existence on the mercy of the Lord, then we can become humble. But if we think it's by our own endeavors that I can achieve things, and then that's the element of the false ego. So that's part of the process is Krishna consciousness. But the means for it, we can cultivate these different processes. But we have to chant the holy names of the Lord. That has to be there. One cannot become humble unless they're chanting the holy names of the Lord, because that process helps the develop the good qualities. Okay. Any other comments, questions? We have about a minute left. Yes, Dr. Phil. Real quick. Real ego means I am servant of Krishna. False ego means whatever else you think you are, that's false. Your real identity is Jivaya Surabhaya Nitya Krishna Das. I am servant of Krishna. That's your real identity. And the other identity you have is called false ego. So we have unlimited false egos and one real ego. Okay? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.